Click kaya959.co.za.
This is how we do it.
To download the Point of View podcast.
So you all know OUTA, right? Organization Undoing Tax Abuse. And you remember them from all our days when we were fighting ETOLs. Now, I suspect this is going to be one of those. If you have a solar panel in your home, hands up, those of you who checked how compliant you are in putting a solar panel in your home. And I suppose there are many people who went all out during those dark days when we were all faced with load shedding. People made a plan. That's what you do. When your children need light and you need to work with electricity or energy, you made a plan. Well, how many of us checked whether we were compliant or not? It turns out a lot of us may not be. This is according to the Association of Municipal Electricity Utilities. To help us understand what the problem is OUTA CEO Wayne Duvenich. Thank you so much, Wayne, for talking to us. Good evening and welcome.
Good evening. Nice to be with you and your listeners.
You're outraged by all of this. What's the problem?
I think, you know, like the ETOL matter, all we're trying to do is just ensure the government introduces policies that are A, within the law, and B, very rational and make sense for the public. And when they don't, we question that. And so what we saw with Eskom initially, and now we see municipalities becoming quite a mess, because municipalities have their own powers. They're entitled to introduce bylaws and rules and charges. But when it comes to electricity, they cannot reinvent the wheel. They cannot go and start charging additional fees for things that are guided by NERSA and those regulations. So this is where it gets a bit murky. So let's start with
maybe let's start here and help us understand, Wayne. You speak of government, and I think for me, the clarity needs to be made. Who is who here in the zoo? Let's start with this Association of Municipal Electricity Utilities. Who are they?
Well, they're just an association that gives guidance and input to municipalities. So as their name says, Association of Municipal Electricity Utilities. So you've got municipalities who are also distributors of electricity. And they've got to conform to rules and laws and standards as well.
Okay.
So let's start right in the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
This side of the meter, in other words, in my home,
mm-hmm.
if I want to reduce my reliance on Eskom,
mm-hmm.
I might fit a gas stove, I might fit a gas geyser, I might put a generator in, and so many other things, fit LED lights and lower my consumption. And that's got nothing to do with Eskom, quite frankly. That's what we're saying. This is on this side. So long as I've got a certificate of compliance by a qualified electrician, which is what the law states, my house is legal. My home is legal. My small business is legal. And I'm not pushing anything back into the grid. Now, that's where the difference is. So if I'm not pushing anything back into the grid, you have no say on what I should be doing here.
In other words, if I wanted to be completely off the grid, by whatever means I choose to use to be off the grid, it's my business, as long as I don't endanger my home and others and so on by, as you said, checking that all the wiring and all of that is safe. And that will come from an official
electrician.
Exactly. So that's what you're saying.
Yeah, so he gives us a certificate of compliance. And that's that, you know, there's nothing more you can do. The big question now starts to come in.
Before you go. So this Occupational Health and Safety Act is regulated by who?
By the Department of Labor.
Got you. That's very important. Okay?
Okay.
Go on.
So they're making sure that people are qualified.
Yeah.
They've got the right qualifications, and they are entitled now to come and say, right, I have checked your house and it has certification. It's compliant to the laws of how you how safe it is from electricity point of view.
So the guy that comes out to give you the compliance certificate, his work is regulated by the Department of Labor.
Yeah.
Got you. And then?
And there's South African Bureau of Standards, which feed into that. But that person is qualified, and that comes through the Department of Labor.
Got you. Okay.
Okay, so now the big question comes in, as, and where this is where Eskom and everybody's getting involved. But hold on, we we're providing electricity, and we need to know how many people have got these systems.
Mm-hmm.
Because when the sun isn't shining, suddenly you all need electricity. We've got to supply that if you are partially reliant on us. In other words, if you are off-grid completely, in other words, they can come and take away your connection at your pavement on your boundary wall,
mm-hmm.
then you're saying, I don't need you, Eskom, or I don't need you, municipality. In which case, you don't even have to pay the setup fees. The monthly fees, mm-hmm. The network fees, is what they call them. Now, that's a big step. Very few households have gone that far, but some have, and mm-hmm. businesses. And that's where you've got to put in backup generators in case it is cloudy for a week or two. There's no sun. You might have a wind turbine on your home. Small wind turbines are now being fitted in so people can capitalize on not only solar but wind, especially at the coast.
Mm.
You would always have onshore and offshore wind to charge your batteries. So you've got this battery backup, which is charged by natural, it's wind or solar. And in the event that the wind isn't blowing and the sun isn't shining, you've got to say, well, I still need you, Eskom. In that case, they're going to charge you the network fee.
Got you.
And that's where this is all going.
Mm.
They need to also balance the power needs of the country.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Now they've got registration fees. And now they've got all these other things coming in. We're starting to question. First of all, we questioned this onerous condition of you have to have an electrical engineer that is registered with the Engineers Council of South Africa. We've now, Eskom have rescinded on that and said, okay, we agree. You only need an electrician.
Okay.
Well, that's the first start. But there are some municipalities, mm-hmm. including the city of Cape Town, who are saying, no, we still want an engineer to sign this off. Now, we understand that in the event that there's a pushback into the grid, you're selling your electronics to the city.
Yes.
That's a different story. But for those who aren't, and that is the majority,
mm.
who are using their stored energy and powering their homes in the evenings and during the day when their pumps are running and whatever, that... those people we're saying, what is the need for registration and what is the need for the electrician sign off? And that's where it starts to become murky, and that's where it's going to be tested, especially at a municipal level and probably in a court of law, where we're saying, what do you need this information for? If it's information you want, well, you don't need us to tell you how many. There's easier ways to find out how many solar panels or homes or businesses are fitted with solar panels, I can assure you. And they know that. You just have to do drone footage, Google Earth footage, and they're not fools. They know, and they can see. And they already know that 7,000 megawatts has already taken off the grid by solar installations over the last 5 years or 4 years. So they know how much is being taken off the grid already by the public. And they're going to have to plan for that. They've got models. They've got AI that tells mm-hmm. them exactly how much they're going to need in winter, summer, cloudy periods, non-cloudy periods, and so forth. And they've got to plan accordingly. That's their conundrum.
So if we just put it simply, what are your concerns, Zata?
Well, our concerns is do not apply onerous conditions to the public when it's not necessary.
Mm.
So we're asking the question, for what reason do you want me to register?
Mm-hmm.
If you're wanting me to register because you're going to now start charging me as the person who's installed solar because of your inefficiency,
mm-hmm.
I now put solar so I don't rely heavily on you, but I still rely on you when the weather's bad, and you're going to charge me an additional fee. Now we're getting into a very different space. So people with solar
mm-hmm.
are now saying, look, I don't need you all the time, but I'm paying my network fee like everybody else.
Mm.
And if you want to charge me more, well, now you're getting into murky waters where potentially we could go to court and ask the court to rule. Where is the rationale in that? So in other words, my neighbor, who also reduced his or her reliance on Eskom, but not by putting solar, but by fitting gas stoves and gas geysers, are they paying?
So has there been a pronouncement on what the reasons behind the registration requirement is?
They are saying purely, and this is where it's going into gray area. They're just saying we need to know how many so that we can plan.
Yeah.
There's two factors. There's a safety factor.
Yes.
And we're saying, well, if people aren't pushing back, the safety factor is removed.
Mm-hmm.
And also they use that as a bit of a red herring because we've been doing this for years and there hasn't been a safety issue. So why has it suddenly become a safety issue? The real reason we're seeing is that they are wanting to see to what extent is their potential offsetting of their lost revenue by charging people who have introduced small-scale embedded generation into their homes In which case they want to say, well, you're relying on Eskom's need more than your neighbor who doesn't have it, therefore you should pay more for the network fee. They haven't said that outright.
This you're is just where you suspicious. Think they're going. You're just suspicious.
Now, okay. Well, first we've got to ask the question, what is the reason? What is the real reason that you want us to register? And then the next question is, well, what if people don't register?
Mm-hmm.
Can you cut them off? We're mm-hmm. saying there's no way you can cut people off if they don't register. Now you're getting into this whole e-toll saga. Hmm. So what if I don't pay? What are you going to do? And enforcement is the biggest problem in government's strategies of this nature. So in other words, government has this view that if they legislate something, it all falls into place, but it doesn't, because in the e-toll saga, taxis weren't registering, lots of people were registering. We're saying, how do you take them off the road?
All right.
In this case, it's one of, I'm going to switch your electricity off. And then we're saying, well, you're transgressing the law. If you want to cut people off because they haven't registered, be careful, Mr. Municipality or Eskom, because you cannot do that legally.
Mm.
That's where we're going here. There's a legal challenge coming.
Got you. Outer CEO, Wayne Tivenage. Celeste Munsing is the middle manager, new business development, Eskom Distribution, who's been listening to all of this. Celeste, thank you so much for your time. Good evening and welcome.
Good evening, Pomelo, and evening to the listeners. Thank you for having me.
I can hear in your tone you are chuckling away there, Celeste.
Okay.
Look, I'm just a layperson. I just want to understand, and I think many of us just want to understand. Help us out. You are asking people with solar panels to come forth and register. Why?
Yeah. There's a few reasons, Pomelo, and I think first and foremost there is. There is a requirement in terms of the Electricity Regulation Act, Schedule 2. So for customers greater than 100 kVA, they would be required to register directly with NERSA.
Yes.
For those up to 100 kVA, they are exempted from registering from NERSA. However, if you read carefully, it says you, in order to keep your connection with the grid, you would be required to meet the requirements of the utility in terms of making sure that that supply is safely integrated with the grid. So I think that is the one perspective. So we talk about registration. Registration is largely about the country in terms of the integrated resource plan, knowing how many megawatts we've got in the energy mix. So 2019, there was an integrated resource plan that indicated that small-scale embedded generators will be integrated and allowed to connect in the grid, specifically the low-voltage network. So prior to that, you could only connect systems larger than 1 MVA on the medium voltage network, which is the network above 1,000 volts. So that only came into play 2019. And because of that, there needed to be registration, so we knew how much in the country we planned. So that's at the country level, that it's Department of Energy at a country level will do the planning for the country, and that goes into the plans.
Mm.
So that's one element of where you would see the need for registration. Mm. The other benefit is when you run a utility, you need to plan. It's the same way like the road authorities. You need to have your car registered annually. They know how many cars on the road, which area, which freeways they would use, so they can start planning for roads and the likes of that. In the same way, cars that do register, got to make sure that they have a certificate of roadworthiness. In the same light, we got to make sure that any installation, whether it's a load or a generator, is safe to connect on the grid. Not just for the user, but for everyone, including the Eskom employees. So there is the OSH Act, and the OSH Act is quite clear in terms of what is required for safety. There is also the Department of Labor, who is quite clear in 2019, when RP 2019 indicated we're introducing small-scale embedded generators on the network. They also put a directive that made it clear on what's the requirement. And I think in that requirement, yes, in the same way, the road authorities will pull out vehicles that work without brakes or pose a risk on rainy days where the wipers don't work or the lights don't work at night, the brake lights. In the same way, we've got to make sure that when these things connect onto our grid, the small-scale embedded generators, it's done in a manner that is safe for all. I think that's important, Pamela, if I may.
So the concerns by OUTA, how do you respond to those?
Yeah, so I think we just need to be factual. So from a legal perspective, I think as a utility, Eskom Distribution, the municipalities will draw on multiple legal frameworks, first of all. So registration is the one aspect of it. And then there is the OSH Act. And then there's the electrical installation regulations. So they provide a framework for making sure that whatever happens on the electricity network or grid is done in a safe manner. One of the prerequisites will be a certificate of compliance. And that is one of the aspects that would be required for ensuring that the installation is safe. There is the grid code and the electricity regulation. So there's multiple frameworks, and a lot of the frameworks basically is saying that safety is mandatory, if I can put it like that. It's not optional.
Yeah.
You're not, you can decide whether you want to be safe.
And
you take your car on the road.
Sure.
You cannot say, if your car is safe, you can. If your car is not safe, it's also you can on the road. You know, it's not optional.
Mm.
You need to be safe when you drive your car on the road. If you drive your car in your farm, in your rural backyard, or you know, it's fine if you're using it for that. But the moment you put your vehicle in the same way you put your SSEG on the network, your neighbor, your family, our employees working on the line, we've got to make sure we're accountable for the safety.
Suresh, are you saying that it's not enough to have a registered electrician? You need other measures to be in place so that you can manage the safety. That's the one element.
So, yeah. So there's a few layers, Pamela.
Mm-hmm.
So the basic core layer that if you look at the OSH Act and the electricity installation regulation, they will call for a COC. If you look at the directive by the Department of Labor, they would say that the utility may also inspect that the installation is safe.
Mm.
But there was two layers introduced as well to make sure the safety. So the first one is the COC, but the COC is signed off by the Department of Labor registered person, which is your master electrician or installation electrician, and so forth. So that's the guy that would sign off according to the standards as found in what SABS will publish, and they're accountable for publishing standards in the country, which is the low voltage regulations. So they've published standards for low voltage. There are some gaps, and I think that's what the AMU was pointing out. There were some gaps, and the industry between Eskom and the AMU for a large part were saying in the gaps for how these things should operate with the grid. So when you connect to the grid, you've got to make sure that it integrates in a safe way. It knows how to switch off. It knows how to switch on. I'm just talking very simply. Mm. And when it generates power that may go into the grid, and by the way, municipalities and Eskom do have services that allow customers to export.
Mm.
Customers can get the benefit of also offsetting their bill with their surplus. City of Cape Town will pay you for that surplus.
Yeah.
So for the smaller customers like the residential, there is that benefit.
Yeah.
But when you do that, your inverter has to have a type test certificate. It means in the factory, the inverter has been tested to to know how to switch on, to switch off. It produces sine waves, not square waves, so you're not giving, you're not compromising quality of supply. So that's the second layer of safety. So the inverter. So prior to 2019, many of the installations, even when we didn't have a framework in the country, were connecting on the LV. I can guarantee you none of them have NRS 097, which is a standard that was put by the industry to say, in absence of SABS, what is a safe connection? What makes a safe connection? So Eskim, the municipality under NRS, the industry players, the SAPFIAs, all the players that got together in the industry said, so while SABS, by the way, SABS did publish in 2021, 22, and they withdrew the rules for parallel operation. So that was withdrawn, and when that was withdrawn, I think that was basically the turning point to say, so if Department of Labor registered persons can only sign what's in the low voltage regulation, and now you withdraw something out of the low voltage regulation, who can sign? And that's when the industry said, okay, the safety net will be put in, we'll have a professional engineer, because they have the mandate to sign. They're not limited like the Department of Labor register is limited only by what's in the low voltage regulation, the wiring code.
So Salesh, the suspicion that what's likely to come to follow once you've done all the assessments as to who's on the grid, who's not on the grid, who's got partial requirements for you to supplement their energy needs, that you are going to be charging us and almost penalizing us, is that true?
Yeah, I just think that's an incorrect narrative. I think, first of all, the national regulator, electricity regulator of South Africa, they basically have some, so they would basically review what is a recovery of cost on an annual basis. So Eskom is not driven by profit. It's driven by efficiencies and cost of providing the services. So the cost of providing the services, you would go to NERSA and you say, NERSA, for me to provide these services, this is what it cost us to produce electricity. This is what it cost us to transmit the electricity. This is what it cost us to meter the electricity. And this is the total revenue we need to collect. So NERSA will say yes or no. They'll say you want efficiencies in this place or that place. Or they'll say, and they will adjust. And that's request on an annual basis that will result in a tariff increase. Then the tariff is applied. And when the tariff is applied, when you need to recover cost, whether you have a PV system or don't have a PV system, just to have the point at your house or on your premises, there's a cost of providing the service, making sure the cable is there, the service is there. Yeah. It's the same with telco.
Yes, I was going to say,
If you use for data, everyone's got a Wi-Fi
line
in the house.
Yeah.
Whether you use the data or not, you pay a fixed rental.
Correct,
and that's how it works.
Yeah.
If you want to change your service provider, you can, but you still pay that fixed rental. So the rental for providing that network, these lines require maintenance, they require building.
Yeah.
These are the lines that will become the backbone for the future energy system.
That's already in place, am I correct?
So the energy system is continuously upgrading and being modernized.
Mm.
So the future, the energy system we have was never designed for two-way. We're now modernizing the system to have a two-way system.
Mm.
Energy will be traveling in all directions.
Back and forth.
We're going to be moving towards smart meters.
Yes.
The future will be so exciting. You could sell to your neighbor.
Yeah.
Your neighbor could sell to you. Because of the variability of the nature of while the sun shines or the wind blows, because of that, you don't know when you got surplus and then you got less.
Yes.
The whole industry will move towards trading.
Okay.
That network, which you pay in the fixed charge, will enable that trading to happen.
Yeah.
If you have to only use it for yourself, you're going to sit with surplus that's wasted. If you got surplus, push it in the grid. We've got a framework to do it. As a customer, you can offset your bill. You can. In the future, there will be lots of exciting. I think it's going to be very exciting. The network is going to become smarter.
Yeah, I totally get it. So I suppose for personally, let me tell you, in fact, I would like to see this go to court, but I think because if not, you know, we're going to linger around this for a long time. But I think it would be absolutely fantastic for the court to pronounce on this based on some of the things that you're saying. So if they want to take it to court, let them, and maybe, I think it will be interesting.
Yeah, so maybe if I can add, Pamela. So Eskom has led a delegation 2 weeks ago with South African Bureau of Standards.
Yes.
And the intention was to say, look, you know, the rules for parallel operation was published in 2022 but withdrawn.
Yes.
And because of that, it resulted in some municipalities requiring PRNs, and Eskom for a long time did require PRNs as mandatory and the only requirement.
Yes.
Then we said, okay, then as Eskom, we realized we have a problem if our residential customers are not coming forward. Okay? Outer has put it forward that, and we appreciate and we hear it. It's expensive, it's onerous on them. So we looked at ways of streamlining, and we made a decision for us to bring our customers forward. We started a campaign. By the way, the campaign didn't start now. It started 2 years ago, 3 years ago. Even with that, the uptake was very, very low. I think December 23, where we said to the customers, we've got a registration campaign. There's going to be no fees for you. So most of your fees would be exempted for registration-related costs because there's a connection involved, because there's a smart meter needed. The old meters cannot do bi-reaction. You're going to need a smart meter. But smart meter also opens a host and a suite of services in the future. Same like when you get an Apple device. Once you get an Apple device, you open a suite of Apple solutions. In the same way, the network and the municipalities and Eskom, once they modernize the grid, you open a whole new industry. That grid will be the future ecosystem for this country.
It sounds fascinating and it sounds exciting all at the same time. And as I said, you know, let's wait and see. You know, but thank you for unpacking it for us so lovely.
Maybe very nicely. But what's very interesting, I mean, this is not a matter for court. I mean, the laws are all there. I mean, what we need to do and what we started with Eskom, we led a discussion with South African Bureau of Standards. Yep. They gave us the assurance December, January.
Yep.
The rules for parallel operation will be published for public comment.
Okay, got you.
Which means it's clear then what would be the rules. The second step is Department of Labor would then preside on what, and if it's there, that the Department of Labor registered person will be able to sign. And I think that clears out. We don't need to go to court, and it'll make it very, very clear, I think.
Excellent. Yeah. Thank you. I appreciate that. And I think you're spot on. So hopefully we'll get to a point where as soon as possible, the SABS will be able to publish those. And then maybe, you know, we can all settle down and maybe, engage with it differently. But I appreciate your time, Celestia.
And we really, really appreciate and we acknowledge the fears of the customers. We acknowledge the confusion of the customers. We also appreciate that Outer is trying to represent those fears. But in doing so, we just need to make sure we do it in a constructive way. We don't mislead. We still want people to be legal. It's the same way we don't want people with illegal, unsafe cars on the road. You know, it's the same. We can't tell people don't register your car, carry on driving.
Gotcha.
You know, it's the same. We want to encourage a lawful society, and we want to be part of this journey and make it exciting and interesting and seamless and safe for everyone.
No, I totally get you. Thank you so much for making time to explain it all to us. Thank you very much, Celeste. He is a middle manager at New Business Development Eskom Distribution. That was Celeste Mansingh. And yeah, I think let's just keep our eyes on this because I think it will affect all of us. And I think have an open mind about it. It's 5 minutes off.
Click kaya959.co.za. This is how we do it. To download the Point of View podcast.